I'm going to just say that over again. My mother, your mother, Embracing Slow Medicine, The Compassionate Approach to Caring for Your Aging Loved Ones by Dennis McCullough, MD. This book was a gift to us by a dear friend from our college days, and it just came at the right time in our lives. In doing this, I would like to emphasize that I am not an expert on this subject. I would also like to emphasize that part of the reason for us to be vigilant and attentive to many of these things is that no two persons experience aging, or any part of life, of course, and even the same disease in the same way. There is not a chart to help us navigate the particular path our loved ones are going along. And the more preparations we make, the smoother that path will be. Also, I would like to emphasize that the points made here are Dr. McCullough's, unless otherwise stated. Finally, I will be presenting a lot of information, but I hope that some of it will be helpful for you. Aging has always presented challenges to those experiencing it and to their families. Elders today have added factors to increase these challenges. To begin with, our life expectancy has increased dramatically. Someone who was born in 1930 could look forward to living on average to the age of 60. And for someone who was born in 2000, their life expectancy has extended to approximately age 77. However, the National Center for Health Statistics reports that, and of course this is true, the older you are, the longer your life expectancy. So that means, for example, that today a 75-year-old man, a 75-year-old woman can expect to live to approximately age 87.5, and an 85-year-old man can expect to live to approximately age 91. Add to this the improvement of medical interventions, and these can be amazing blessings, as Bruce and I well know. However, as Dr. McCullough writes, the vast machinery of modern medicine, which can heroically invoke to save a premature baby, when visited upon an equally vulnerable and failing great-grandmother, cannot save her life so much as to tortuously and inhumanely complicate her dying. Finally, another reason the challenges of aging have changed is that many children no longer live in the same city, town, or general area where they grew up. And, as in our case, our parents may move away as well. As a result, our mobile society has separated children from their aging parents, as well as siblings from one another. This means that children may not have an intimate knowledge of their parents, their support systems, their habits, their medical histories, their medicines, etc. They also haven't had the opportunity to slowly change that nature of their relationship from the way it was when they were children to a gradually forged one where the child can be trusted to minister and care for the parent. The author of the book I will be reviewing tonight, Dennis McCullough, is a gerontologist, a physician dealing in the care of older adults. His patients live in a retirement community near Dartmouth College in New Hampshire. He writes both as a physician and as a child of an aging parent, hence the book's title, My Mother, Your Mother. Throughout the book, he recounts the experience of his patients to illustrate his point, and more particularly, at the start of each chapter, about the stations of aging, he gives a personal account of how his mother experienced that particular stage. Dr. McCullough has seen not only how parent and child can successfully navigate the aging process, he has seen the less successful as well as worst case scenarios. I can sum up his advice to the children. Advice to the children of aging parents in three points. First, to maintain a good relationship with your elder as well as your siblings. Two, form a relationship with your elder's physician or physicians. And follow the practice of slow medicine. And I will give you a definition of this shortly. More particularly, this book is about elders in their 80s, which is the fastest growing age group at present. He writes, and this is the theme of the book, this particular group of elders has the highest likelihood of benefiting from care that is more measured and reflective, and that actually stands back from rushed in-hospital interventions and slows down to balance thoughtfully the separate multiple and complex issues of life. This is, in a nutshell, slow medicine. Slow medicine is a family-centered, less expensive way shaped by habits of cooperation, coordination, and conservation of limited resources. He has listed 5 components that make up what he means by slow medicine, and I have summed them up here. First, we need to understand our parents. Second, we need to accept that we are no longer totally independent from one another. We need to communicate well. And this is a really high standard that he places on the doctor-patient relationship. He says doctors need to be their patients' advocates. And I imagine that's what he is. But I haven't seen somebody be an advocate like he is. He models in the book anyway. And finally, we need to be kind. You can see that these are basic guidelines for maintaining a good relationship, both between parent and child, as well as between the parent and his or her physician. To better understand how these play out, we will walk through the various stages of life for an older person. But before we do... Okay. Yeah. I don't know what I'm pressing, but... Is it the top one? Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Can you do that? And then I will point it correctly. Okay. Before we do that, I would like to look at what Dr. McCullough calls the circle of concern, which he says is at the heart of slow medicine. And the circle of concern is a group of people who are closest to the elder, who provide steady support. Beyond family members, these can include friends, neighbors, and church family. These folks are able to provide support and help, not merely for a crisis, but for the long run. This is of particular interest to us who desire to support the older members of our church family. Those in the circle of concern will want to stay up to date with their friend's condition and will want to know how to help. Visits, meals, phone calls, and help in other ways, will usually be appreciated. The reason I have stated strongly the word usually is that the author indicated that sometime help is not appreciated due to various factors. If we as the elder or the caretaker are tired and overwhelmed, he strongly warns us not to discourage the attentions and help of friends. We will regret this in the future when help is needed. And throughout the book, Dr. McCullough makes reference to this group, the circle of concern. And with regard to family members, it is important that siblings in a family stay in touch with one another, both with their parent and with each other. Open communication will pay off throughout the various stations of aging. With open communication and sharing of information, hopefully trust is built up so that those who haven't been close to the situation can trust the decisions of those who have. And here is an example of when this wasn't the case. And this is a patient of Dr. McCullough. Elaine's son flew in from California and arrived at the hospital just as the gathered family members were heading home and feeling relief at having finally reached consensus through extended and sometimes difficult conversations among themselves and with Elaine's physician. While the rest of the family agreed on pursuing a less aggressive approach to Elaine's failed chemotherapy, their prodigal sibling, alarmed and armed with stories offered by friends and work colleagues on the other coast, and anxious to make up for his absence, insisted on another detailed review of the whole situation. Tired but resigned, the family and Elaine's personal physician gathered again the next day for the work to be done. In order to make this talk more authentic to our church, I did a little field study and interviewed a couple of people who will remain nameless. I would like to list what these two have found very helpful from the circle of concern in their lives. Regular phone calls by a neighbor asking, "Is everything okay?" Baked goods that a neighbor has dropped by. A family member who helped in a medical crisis, who knows what to do to leave the planet, and who recommends, not forces, decisions. Helping one another, helping each other, so that the help isn't one-sided. The importance of children not trying to run their parents' life, and the value of not sharing all the little problems of life. Dr. McCullough has come up with a description of the stages of life that people experience in their 80s. Okay, that was that one. And here they are. These are the 8 stages. And if you'll notice, I have put brackets around the last two. I will mainly deal with stations 1 through 6. I will touch on death and grieving at the end. But in the next part of the presentation, I will first read a narrative about someone in that station. Then I will present briefly what the elder experiences in that stage, and then what we can do to assist our elders. The narrative is either about Dr. McCullough's mother or patient, my mother, or my mother-in-law. First one is the station of stability. In the station of stability, everything is fine. Oh, my narrative. This is Dr. McCullough's mother. At 85, my mother Bertha begins her morning when she wants to. No hurry to get up and out, keep the nightgown on, or gradually get dressed. So many clothes in the closet, but few are used. Remember to place the placard outside on the apartment doorknob so the administrator in her senior living complex knows that she is safely up and started. The newspaper is at the door for reading in her green chair by the window with instant coffee. Perhaps a little cold cereal later. Get dressed for lunch and take a walk downstairs. Chat with friends and fellow inmates, as she calls them, over a hot lunch. Pick up a box lunch for eating later. Return to her room for a nap. Bingo this evening. And the Pistons are playing later tonight. And next month, she'll be going with me to Hawaii, a lifelong dream come true that's the envy of her friends. Looks like it's a good day. So what is stability like? Everything's okay. Everything's fine. Though there are some changes that have occurred in them physically and how they manage their lives as they age, this station is marked by stable health and independence. It is natural to just hope that it will go on like this forever, but this is the time to prepare for future challenges. As an aside, it is this station that I found, it is at this station during which we naturally do not do anything. It is my opinion that it is the recommendations for what we can do during this time of life that I learned the most and valued the most. Families rally for a crisis for the later stations, but it is so valuable to start rallying at this point. This is the time to connect with your elder. He suggests making a 72-hour visit with your parent or parents. And during this time, your agenda is to spend time with your parent. You are a fly on the wall, observing their life and fitting in with their life and habits. Who calls them? What's on their schedule? How do they manage their daily lives, like their shopping. You get a better sense of their capacities. You will also have quiet times to just talk and let subjects come up naturally. Next, you can begin to go to doctor's visits, and of course he stresses this. In fact, it would be good to participate in an annual health checkup. These are good opportunities to connect and get to know the doctor. Dr. McCullough writes that if your parent may be in denial about what is to come, it is very important for those around your parent, including you, to not be in denial. Start a discussion about what are their preferences regarding health decisions, living in their home, end-of-life questions, etc. And start a discussion with your siblings about what is to come. The next thing he suggested, and I think this is real helpful, and I've got information about this, is to create a durable power of attorney for health care. This is different from a living will, which is also called a health care directive. The living will lists the type of health care that you would like to receive or not receive if you're incapacitated. But the durable power of attorney for healthcare gives a designated person the responsible to make those decisions. There is an advantage to having this person designated, since a living will cannot foresee all the possible outcomes of a health crisis. A designated person will be able to consider all the conditions and make a decision that would more closely agree with your wishes. This is also a patient of Dr. McCullough. The next section is compromise. So I'm hiking. It is clear that these trails up the mountain are getting steeper, Stan admitted to his son during the last hike. That changed awareness for this active 78-year-old forced a rare visit to his doctor, whose tests uncovered a blood abnormality, a slow-moving leukemia. Although the doctor's recommendation was to stay in close touch and just follow the numbers, that is, don't rush to treatment, a swaying sword of Damocles now hung over this accomplished outdoorsman, at least in the eyes of his family. You could fall and bleed to death or put yourself in circumstances where you'd have a heart attack, they worriedly advised. It took more than a year of demonstrating his physical capacities before the family relaxed and accepted his continuing outdoor life. Nonetheless, the hike before the diagnosis marked the watershed moment for this elder and his family. So what's it like? This is when something happens that changes others as well as the elder's view of how they are doing due to illness, a fall, a car accident, etc. Afterwards, there's not a drastic change in abilities, but the experience raises a red flag. And he advises that if there is medical care, this is where slow medicine will be very appropriate, taking time to consider the options. During the compromise station of life, this is a good time to assess their independence level, which can be done by measurements called the AADLs, the IADLs, and the ADLs. And you can see that this indicates how well they are able to live independently. I have listed all of these in the notes, so I'm not going to go through them, but it's a very valuable thing. My mother-in-law is at this level, the basic activities of daily living, because she's able to do all these things, but she could not do anything else in the other measurements. So this is a helpful thing to just be aware of. Another thing that we can be aware of is the overprescribing of medications, and just to be careful that your elder isn't getting medication for something that food, for the diet and exercise and good sleep or whatever could solve. He wants us to be very wary of overprescription of medicine. The author stressed too, and I found this very interesting, that we separate the words aging, disease, and illness. It is at this time that your elder may be told he or she has a particular disease. He writes, "Do not worry when your elder acquires a disease label. Focus instead on the real threat for elders, which is the breakdown of health and the onset of actual and often preventable illnesses." The other field work that I did this week dealt with the things on the bottom. And I went to the local EMT station over on LaPorte Avenue for Porter. It's Porter's medical service. And I said that we were going to be talking about this tonight. And the doctor recommended having information for the emergency medical technicians who come to your house. And I said, where do you put it? Because the doctor suggested one place. Is this the place to put it? And he said, don't put it in the freezer, which is what the doctor in the book said. He said, put it in a Ziploc bag and put it on the fridge. And I have back there Ziploc bags, I have little stickers, and I also have the form. And I highly recommend that every single solitary one of you fill this out. Because we might have needed it sometime, and you just never know. The other thing that they told me about is Smart 911, and this is really cool. And this is something where you can go online and you can identify all sorts of things about your residence, about whether you have an animal that might, you know, bite the leg of the EMT person, how to get into the house, where the nearest fire hydrant is, all sorts of things. So I have registered, Bruce and I, on Smart 911, and I'll do my mother-in-law in the next couple of days. The reason it's called the one that goes on the fridge and goes in a Ziploc bag, the reason it's called Vial of Life, seems sort of silly, it should be Ziploc Bag of Life. The reason it's called that is they used to encourage people to roll this up into a medical, in a medicine, medicine bottle. So it was technically a vial. So that's, but they don't do that anymore. So, and he had no vials, so that's the way it goes. Okay, next one. The next thing is, and my mother found it very useful, is the Lifeline necklace, and I have it on the bottom, or Lifeline system. And you might want to encourage your elder or somebody you know to have this. If they're, and also if somebody is in the assisted living situation, they might have a pull cord or a button on the wall or something like that. Just make sure that this your elder or the person you're concerned about knows how to operate it and knows what to do. So, speaking of which, we're going into crisis, and this is my mom. A couple of years after my dad died, my mom moved from her home of 30 years to a condo near my sister in Philadelphia. About a month later, my mom fainted while making breakfast one morning. When she woke up, she realized that her leg was in great pain. Having been a nurse, she quickly realized that she had broken her femur and couldn't stand up. It took her quite a while to inch over to the telephone, but she finally was able to call 911 and get an ambulance to pick her up. Following surgery, rehab, and a return to her home, she got the Lifeline necklace and faithfully wore it the rest of her life. However, her leg never returned to full strength. So what's it like? This is an acute change in health or circumstances due to an emergency or non-emergency, like elective surgery situation, an escalating situation like dementia. There may be hospitalization, possibly involving a disorienting trip in an ambulance and the ordeal of the emergency room. Continuing with procedures, tests, being seen by many different health professionals, tubes, etc. This can create a confusing time for the elder and his or her family. And then finally, leaving the hospital. and being discharged can be overwhelming with rehab, medication, possible loss of appetite, urinary and bowel changes, etc. So what can we do at the crisis period? Keep a record of your parents' health history in a notebook. And this is something like it's an aha moment for me because we haven't done this. Write down names and, well, we have written some things down, but not in this kind of situation. Write down names and notes that will be helpful to the other family members and protect the patient, always thinking about their needs. Be alert to what medicines are being given and keep your elder oriented. Talking to them, keeping them aware of who they are, where they are, and all of that. And this is an interesting one that was a strong statement for me. Dr. McCullough writes, "Most geriatric doctors I know would not want their parent in a hospital without a family in attendance at all times." So that was like a wake-up call to us. Be alert to medical care. For example, are they giving your elder the correct meds? Ask questions and make sure you get answers, but be considerate and kind to the staff. It's not to your elder's advantage to create animosity. Pay attention to bodily functions. He was real concerned about people's skin, their urinary problems, their appetite. And of course, keep the circle of concern up to date. And watch that your elder is not discharged too early or without proper instructions. And just to reassure you, I'm not going to be talking so much about everything after this. There'll be a little bit less stuff. So, this is a patient. Wait, one last thing. Make sure that your elder is not discharged too early without proper instructions regarding care. At the home or the rehab center or the nursing home. Recovery, what it's like. This is a patient of Dr. McCullough. Jesse was in his mid-80s when he had knee replacement surgery. Overweight, he enjoyed his beer and a sedentary life. He waltzed into surgery expecting to get rid of chronic pain, but not fully appreciated that he was going to have to get fit and learn to walk again. After weeks in the rehab program, he was making little progress. The family was beginning to panic. Would Jesse end up in a nursing home? What would this mean for his wife, Julia, now home alone and in poor health herself? Eventually, overcoming her long-standing reluctance to criticize her husband of 55 years, Julia talked to the doctor. "He's always been a little lazy," she explained. "I think you're not pushing him hard enough." Faced with the fear of the nursing home and the more aggressive prodding of the rehab team, Jesse finally committed to the challenge and worked his way home to a much more highly functioning life. So what is it like in the recovery period? The elder will experience a loss of strength, energy, appetite, and may be depressed. If the elder is in a rehab institution, there will be support and a positive energy to keep moving forward. But Dr. McCullough writes, recovery in late life takes a lot longer than you may have been led to believe by hospital professionals, because standards are set based on the healing of much younger people. So be prepared for this so that in spite of what the doctors or the hospital staff say, your elder will no doubt take longer to recover. And what can we do? We can be their cheerleaders and give them hope that they can move through this difficult station. Be positive and patient. This is where any hospital visit, a knowledge of Medicare and supplemental insurance and knowledge of what is and isn't covered is very helpful. You can work with the rehab staff in the hospital and the home, and if necessary, discuss the possibility of your parent not returning home, but going to a nursing home. But this would be based on the independence measurements. Decline. My mother-in-law, Bruce's mom. Sue Hrivnak at 91 is happy to have her friends over, which she's doing right now, and play a game of cards, which she's doing right now. She plays well, knowing the rules, but not quite as intensely and competitively as she was used to playing. The next day, however, she usually, or often, has no memory of the friends being over or the game. In the same way, she doesn't remember what her kids and grandkids have told her. However, she delights in the conversation, and we delight in that moment of connecting with her. She and her younger sister live companionably together. She can't walk very far, but she can ride her bike to the mailbox or to the community swimming pool. She is content to sit in her comfy living room chair, praying to her Lord, reading scripture, and rereading a favorite book. She will tell whoever is near about what she has just read. We listen and agree that it is amazing, even though we have heard about what we've heard about this many times before. She needed to have breathing treatments following a hospitalization for pneumonia 5 years ago, but within 6 months, her pulmonologist gave her a clean bill of health. Now her heart is weaker, and she takes some meds for this. She is ready for Jesus to take her home. She used to be impatient for this, but now she is peaceful in her waiting and articulate in her hope. So, what is it like? Dr. McCullough describes this station as a slow drift down a widening river that will eventually empty its elder traveler into the limitless sea. The river widens and the busy world on the riverbanks recedes. And the elder is not so interested in the details of our lives, but really, really, really wants to know that you're okay. The body declines, the heart, kidney, lung failure, cancer may come, physical frailty, dementia. And an elder may experience strokes, small and large ones, which Dr. McCullough indicates cause more disability than death. And what can we do? At this time, it's really important to have concern for physical safety, and especially falls. Determine whether to do further medical intervention or not. Where should the elder be? In a nursing home, living with a family member, or other situations where the elder might be at home with support, like Bruce's mom. This is a good time to listen to your parents' stories, and these will be blessed times to look back at. And, of course, continue to have friends and family visit. Prelude to Dying, My Mom. During my annual visit with my mom, she scheduled a hospital stay for testing so that I could be with her. She had quit smoking a few years earlier, which had helped her breathing so much. But more recently, her difficulties had recommenced. She was encouraged by the exercises that she was doing, so we were all feeling really positive. That time in the hospital went well. It was interesting hearing her comments about how nursing had changed in the 60 years since her nurse's training. She had me sneak a bottle of wine in for her against regulations, but I showed it. I actually opened the thing and showed it to her doctor, and her doctor gave me a wink. Then we came home. I was sure everything was just fine. And a couple of days later, the doctor called. After hearing who was on the line, my mom asked the doctor to wait, asked me to get the cordless phone, and together, holding hands, sitting on the edge of the bed, we heard the doctor say that she had lung cancer and that she only had months to live. He asked her there and then if she wanted to have treatments for it, and she said no, and we hung up the phone. What it's like at this point, they know that death is near. And maybe the family members can't accept it, but they know it. You can expect that they experience certain medical conditions associated with organ failures. It can take a long time. There is less of a concern at this point with diseases and illnesses. And the elder really appreciates visits and friendships. What we can do. If the elder is bedridden or frail, it is important to move the elder person, either to the wheelchair, to the window, to, you know, to wherever. Bring beauty and variety in your elder's life. Flowers, music, games, conversation, read stories, poems, scriptures, and of course, pray with your elder. He didn't have this in the book, but he talked more generally about spiritual support, and I think this is, you know, a Christian would be talking about heaven at this time. Start talking about funerals, burial plots, and I also wanted to say that we talked about that in the era of the station of stability with all of our parents. It was just something we got settled really early in our relationship with them, not this late in the in their lives. Give palliative care, palliative care is the relief of suffering. To improve the quality of life for people with serious illnesses, meds to relieve pain and other symptoms, massage, and other things. And he strongly does not believe in tube feeding. He feels strongly that there should be physical contact between an elder and another person, and that you should be hand-feeding your elder. And of course, that's where, you know, there's a lot of time and people have the time to do it. But he feels that in the later stages of life, that the patient or the elder will be the guide, whether they want to stop eating or not. And that, of course, in the last days, they do stop eating. So those are the stations that I wanted to concentrate and focus on. Rather than discussing the final two stations, death and grieving, which I felt was just too much on top of everything else, and which I also felt not prepared as well to speak about, I will read a final narrative from the book, which does an excellent job of picturing how the book tells about the final stages of life. Robert, and this is one of Dr. McCullough's patients, Robert, nearing 90 and living independently with a spouse in New England, encountered the ever so common heart problems of that stage of life and benefited from both surgery and medications over several years, modern medicine at its best. Eventually, another artery in his heart blocked and he spiraled downhill, ending up in the regional hospital's intensive care unit. His situation was dire. He, his entire family, and his doctors felt the end was near. They all had talked and prepared for this for some time. The father's choice was to accept his death, and he requested comfort measures only, not more surgery. Medications directed only toward the symptoms that distressed him. His doctors and the staff were understanding and supportive. His spouse and six children gathered around him in vigil, offering all the emotional, psychological, and spiritual support they could muster for him and for one another. A family of singers, they sang him toward his death, which they expected to take place over hours or at most days, and surrounded by his loved ones, he drifted away. We love our parents, and we want to help and honor them. What I've talked about shows that we make choices as to how much we value them. And it is my experience that doing at least some of this for your elder still results in grief after they die, but it's full of thanksgiving for the life shared with this dear loved one. It is my hope that what I have said tonight has been a help to you, to get you thinking about your role in the lives of your elders and the elders around you. May God give you the wisdom, energy, and love to serve and care for them. This will bless them with what they need physically, emotionally, and spiritually at a time of life that they need it so much. And may we who are entering that station of life be open to the love and service of those around us. And to conclude, I would like to read something from Billy Graham, which beautifully ties together the themes of the book and our Christian faith. Time magazine asked Billy Graham whether, with all our advanced medical technology, we perhaps fear death and fight it too much. I think we often do, he said. I'm convinced that in some cases we aren't so much prolonging life, but prolonging death. Over his long life, Billy Graham has endured some serious medical crises. He now has Parkinson's disease and prostate cancer and a shunt to drain excess water from his brain. He said, I'm thankful for the incredible advances in medicine that have taken place during my lifetime. I almost certainly wouldn't still be here if it weren't for them, he says. And I believe God has given them to us because he loves us and wants what is best for us, both in this life and the next. But death is a reality common to us all, and for me as a Christian, it isn't something to be feared because I know what lies ahead of me beyond the grave. Thank you.